This is the sat-only version of the audio of U.S. chat from August 25, 2020. Other people's comments are summarized or eliminated as much as possible. After a couple of minutes, Sat joins the chat and she says that if anybody has a good question or an experience that would like to share, to go ahead. Sepide has a question about the ending of the article Nothingness that Sat read in Reno Center a couple of days before. She would like Sat to elaborate on that part. The quote goes as follows. So is the world real or is it unreal? It is real because the base is the silence. It is unreal because the base is reality. It depends on how we look at it, real and unreal. Sat elaborates.
Yeah. Well, is the world real or is it unreal? It is real because the base is silence. It is unreal because the base is reality. There is only one reality. So if that is the base, it's playing with words, and I didn't know it was playing with words, that the both sides saying the same thing, exact the same thing. If one is real, the reflection of it could not be with the substance that the base has. So Sepide, if you can only contemplate on the words, you see that it's a play of words, and he's really saying the same thing, that the shadow of the tree is the shadow of the tree, and the tree is the tree, you know, in two different ways approaching it.
Serenia says that recently we talked about the question about free will and karma in Most Precious, and she has been contemplating on it and reading it again and again, and she has a little bit of a better understanding. But she would like to ask a question about the last line, which is about God's will, and is as follows.
Even in thy will or God's will, there is a thin veil of falsehood and separation. Mm-hmm. So I would like to know, What does that mean? Thank you.
Sure, that's a beautiful question. I welcome this type of a deep question. When you think it's your will and it's your effort that is doing it, is one thing. You don't even rely on a higher power. People struggle and do whatever they can to accomplish something. And if they do, they give the credit to themselves. And if they fail, they give the condemnation to themselves. So this is a basic human approach. And then we have those that believe in God and rely on God, but they haven't found the God within that is the closest to their heart. So they say it's God's will. If they fail, they say it's God's will. And usually they don't say it's God's will if they succeed. But in any case, that's how it goes. And that the reality of it is, since God is omnipresent, there is only one existence that we call God. This is the thin veil that needs to come down eventually by the path of self-realization, that I am the grace. When the mind is calm, there is absolutely nothing that what we call grace, meaning that everything goes smoothly without the agitation of the mind. So that is what this is talking about. It is explaining the common approach to doership, and then brings the trust in the God that is someplace that we trust and love. And then it takes you even deeper to the place where it proves to you that your existence, your true serenia, the nature, the real nature of serenia before she left home in the form of a body, it is that grace. It is that perfection. So that's what it means.
Adrian talks about the satsang in Renu Center, which was that the world is a reflection of our own mind and behavior. And she says that I contemplated on it and I thought that the only way is to disengage from my mind. And she would like to ask Sat if that is correct.
You're doing it right. You see, I think the teaching is trying to tell us for years and years now that you cannot eliminate thoughts by thoughts. And it's hard to understand that because the only vehicle of survival and identification, reliance for us, meaning human race, was on the mind and its thoughts. So we get to the point in spirituality or religion, which is an amazing point where you give up. It doesn't make sense to you anymore. If something is lacking, something does not resonate with you the way you want it. I mean, you accept it, you enjoy it, you benefit from it, but there is an intersection in our life that somehow questions pops out. That doesn't make sense. Now, this is what my life is story. And believe me, after doing all sorts of yoga, you know, karma yoga, bhakti yoga, all of that stuff, I came to realize that all of those were stepping stones to bring me to where I realized that not going with the mind and not believing everything that we believe from outside, from universal mind, collective mind, or our own mind, it is helping us very temporary, almost like a pacifier. But it does not remedy us from a greater struggle. And through my own experience and struggle and inner teaching, I have realized that peace is a very quiet mind, and the mind does not quiet down as long as we identify with it and we converse with it. Mind is the bazaar. It's an inner bazaar and also outer bazaar, really is. It's only mind. So yes, your realization is right on. When we get tired of all the practices we've done, and everything that austerity or fasting or whatever it is that we've done, and we still do not find satisfaction, is the grace of all those steps gives us the key, which is the self-meditation, a contact with our reality, with are you with me, or omniscient God, or that, so that we're not dependent on logic anymore or ideas. We have firsthand. As you all remember, past few times that I've been with you guys, when there is a discussion about how to do this and that, I said, wait a minute, let's just stop here and let's just experience it. And this is what we did on Sunday. Nothing better than not so much talk about it and analyze it, but more like contemplating on the truth in the silence of your own heart. To me, that has been what the essence of all of those searching and finding and doing and all of that. And I always call it the last stroke. It means we've done all of that. We've done our charity. We've done our devotion and all of that. That was amazing for our life. Without that, we wouldn't be ready for this. But it gets to the point that God or existence says, okay, Now let's see if we can say I and my Father are one.
Ida talks about the feeling of emptiness, and she says that she has discussed this with Sat before, and recently when the subject came up in the Reno Center, she feels like she has a deeper grasp of it. And Sat continues.
Yes, sometimes people can say, I feel empty, but that is an emotional emptiness. It almost seems like mild depression. But the emptiness is really nothingness, means no form, no name, just peace as Ananda. And that's our true nature that we are striving to go back home with. I mean, the story that came in one of the Sundays some years ago, it just opened itself up to me in a very visible, invisible way. Really describes it beautifully, that we have accepted all of these ideas, and with every idea that we believed, we got farther from our source. And in the way back home, we have to spit these ideas as not true. Not this, not this, not this, not this. And put down our load, our luggage of past, our load of now, the load of tomorrow that anticipation makes us have. So this is a very simple understanding. It's not even practice. It's an understanding that it deepens in us and automatically does the miracle work. All we have to do is have an open mind and heart to it and not brush it away as something that is just for few. No, it isn't for few. It is our nature. We can't always look up to those few. We need to be amongst those few. The only reason besides benefit that goes to the person that asked question is that by answering one question, a lot of questions of others becomes eliminated that they don't even want to share, but they have it in their mind. So the beauty of that song, whether it's sharing or asking question, is not just for a question to be asked and an answer to be given. It is far more than that. It occurs something, someplace, with different people differently. So that's why I welcome sharing that is appropriate sharing and the questions that are really important.
Tahmine thanks Sat for her teachings. And then she explains that the article that Sat read on Sunday, which was called Nothingness, scared her daughter. Tahmine was tried to explain to her daughter as best as she could and try to compare this dream and the nothingness with the night dream. And she continues.
Is that a way to look at it?
Yes, it is a good way to look at it. And I don't know how to... what I read is very, very true, at least to myself. And it is over 40 years of experiences, incredible experiences. The thing is that you don't become nothing. You transcend junk. You transcend clutter. You transcend a messy mind. You transcend suffering. You transcend... It says in the most precious, the first and second question, go beyond the bind and experience no pain and suffering. That doesn't mean that we will not function in the world. People that are around me, they know that I'm capable of functioning. Or any of you guys that have practiced and have a deeper understanding, that you're your life seems to go with more grace than a struggle. So if you look at it with your mind, yes, it's like the mind says, are you kidding me? After all the information I gather, you're telling me that you can take every thought and go to silence? What does that mean? Well, I would say at that point, you're not ready for this article. And it's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Question it, doubt it, throw it away. But I assure you, eventually, we come back to the point, I am tired. I am tired of this type of living. Even if you have the best life, good food, good air, good companionship, there is an emptiness. I don't mean that godly emptiness. There is a vacant place that somehow we fill it up with different things to not feel it. But it is there because we are not back home. This is the problem. We are not back home with our parents, which is our silence and tranquility. So yes, I totally understand her asking this question. And believe me, when I read the letter from truth to untruth, many people were scared out of their skin. But when they dwell on it and when they looked at their own life, yes, the letter being served to me so many times in this lifetime. Now I know why it's being served. Now I know how to use it. That's when I would say you have a deeper understanding and you're ready to understand this letter.
Thank you so much, Vetra. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right. Because not too long ago, I mean, not that I'm saying right now is different, but I am one of those people that really, really tired mm-hmm. of this life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all, yes. I think, there is not a human being, no matter how much money they have and how much they don't have, until they feel home within their own self, they are wandering in the bazaar aimlessly. And then in the end, it adds up to a pile of ashes.
Sepide explains that she had a recent understanding from question number one of Most Precious. It was always a puzzle for her that if you feel pain, how could it be not real? And the way she understands it right now is that because each mind perceives pain and suffering, then it is different for every person and it cannot be real at the base of it because it's experienced differently by different people. And Sat explains.
Yeah, it was a big opening. It depends on what you're conscious of and what your consciousness holds on to. Suffering is always from the mind and you can say pain from the pain of the body. You can have a pain of the body and not suffer in the mind, or you can have fear or an anxiety about the pain of your body and have the pain and suffering together. As long as we identify with the mind and body, even to a smallest degree, to that the smallest degree, we experience this type of living. So we're really striving to open this consciousness more to its own reality than the falsehood we gathered in itself. So it takes time to deepen the understanding of this type of teaching. I told you, my body and mind was the student of my reality for, you know, until now, as I'm talking to you, it's always, there is a deepening, there is always unfoldment. So, We don't have to worry about that part of it. What we have to really see is, like, you see Sepide now and you see Sepide 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, and you see a series of openings, series of better, deeper understanding, and then the light bulb goes on and says, oh my God, you know, this is what it is. So I think from outside, the guide or the Sadhguru Guru points you. And when you take it to heart and put it into your life, the light bulb is always comes from the inner. That's when you really understand it the best.
Aida talks about how, other than anticipation of doing something for sat or doing something on this path of truth, life has no meaning or taste for her. Sat says,
yeah, some people's approach to release is through this type of love. That's what makes them one-pointed and releases other anxieties from their lives. And that's the usage of having this type of love. It's just having it one-pointedness and eliminating other thoughts. And then some people will feel the love because they know that is the truth, what is being spoken, but they are more inclined to go through the wisdom and practice it and find one-pointedness. So that's what they call in India, bhakti and jnani. But for me, it's not one or the other. It has to be mixed together to really be effective. Like, I know that you translate, you do all sorts of things daily. It's not just you waiting for me to see me, but you really feed yourself with the wisdom day and night, as you were sharing to me this today too. So yes, as I said before, for all of us, the wisdom and love, when they are together, the wisdom makes the love wise, and the love makes the wisdom sink in to penetrate. So this is the benefit of bhakti and jnani as one.
Because when I hear what you say or when I type what you say, that just makes me love you more.
Exactly, exactly. If I was giving you rubbish things, you wouldn't feel more love. It is love of the self. I've been saying that for so long. The love that you feel, it sprung from your own being to you. So the more you embrace this love, the more you have this dance within yourself. Because through the wisdom that you hear, and it just pierces your heart, and say, yes, this makes sense now, or this is what I need, or, you know, this type of thing.
Or, wow, oh my God, wow.
Yeah, it's like the time I heard Baba's name, like I said in the Nazanin book, we were in a room of 250 people for transcendental meditation because of the speaker had come from far away. And for no apparent reason, and it did not go with the topic at all, he talks about the story in India where Baba resurrected one of the people he knew very well, that he was in transcendental meditation, which was Hisla. I didn't hear the story well, and then I asked other people what the story was. He just said, Sai Baba. I looked around and I said, oh my God, he is the one I have to see. He is it. As if something happened to my heart. I can honestly say I heard a click into my chest. And then the love, before I even ended up in India, there was a tremendous love because I knew he was my savior. I knew that he will help me. So yes, it's amazing how a little bit of information can open up such an immense source within our own self.
Gopi says that when she is in Sat's presence, her mind is very quiet and there is no judgment and no agitation and no good and bad. She asks,
my question is, how can we carry this joy and happiness and not having this harmony or feeling disharmony and all that all the time. The disharmony that you're mentioning, since nobody else knows, is because of the separation from me. Is it true or not?
That's exactly right. That's the only disharmony that I would have.
Okay, I would say this is your path. This disharmony will do its job and then it will leave you. That's what I was explaining in the some time ago when Ida was saying that all I can concentrate is to get myself here. I mean, you're saying that you feel peace and joy and all of that. It's because you're near and because of the, you know, the situation or the atmosphere that you are in. And, yeah, my answer is I don't know. I've told people many remedies. None of them works, really, because I want to calm them down. But I've gotten to the point I say it is what it is. I had it for so many years and nobody tried to remedy me. So we're just, this is, you know, Baba talks about different love toward God. One is like a mother, you call him a mother, divine mother, one divine father, one divine child, one divine lover, one divine friend. And because you can have him in any form that suits you. And who is to say is the wrong way to go? And the same goes with guide or whoever you look up to or whoever you befriend.
Serving you brings me a lot of joy and happiness.
Oh, here you have it.
So
as long as you're happy and if you feel the peace.
yeah. Thank you, Ajisa.
Sure. And remember, every time, I think those people that mentioning that they are serving me, or as I mentioned that I was serving Baba, or all of that, remember, you're serving yourself. Honesty, God, this is the truth. Everything that I did for Baba in the center or anywhere else, or it added to my expansion. So, and the love that I had for him, he was not in need of that love. God knows he had many. But that opened the path to wisdom for me. So, like I said, everything is a stepping stone to back home. And sometimes in the beginning when people were coming, they would get envious of someone that had this type of love, or they would belittle someone that had this and that. And I kept saying, my gosh, this is two wings. Get over it, you know. It is. You go toward the wisdom and it opens up such a love that you say, oh my God, what just happened? I went to know the truth and now I've fallen in love. And it's just the nature of God. It's a very, whenever you get attracted to the truth, there is a magnet in it that pulls you with love. Thank you, everybody. I enjoyed everyone's company and our oneness. And good night to everyone.